This session is on community cause and corporation. It came into being because when I joined the staff last summer, July, Bill gave me a call and said, we've got staff camp coming up at the end of August. The whole staff here at Willow goes away for a week. And he said, I'd like it if you'd take one of the sessions at staff camp and teach on something. Okay. Basically, what he said is, I want you to communicate lessons you've learned in, 15 years of ministry to the staff. And I, in essence, built the entire lessons that I learned in ministry around this paradigm of community cause and corporation. And it took off amongst our staff, so much so that Bill and Don and some of the elders who were there said, that's something we need to do at the church leadership conference. That's going to serve other churches. So again, what I want to do is give to you a paradigm, a way of viewing a local church such that we can view three circles that need to stay in balance for a church to be healthy. And I want to explain a brief definition of what goes into each circle. Then I want to ferret out some of the implications of how these various circles should work. And then lastly, I want to draw out some implications for your church and leading your church that I think will serve you. The paradigm that I'm working with is that a healthy church has three circles. I guess we have a board. Great. Have three circles that need to exist in a good symbiotic relationship for a church to be healthy. And the three circles are the church existing as community, the church existing as cause, and the church existing as a corporation. All three of these need to be in place for a church to be healthy. If you want a Bible verse to put over this, if that makes you feel good, which it does me, I have one for you. It's pure eisegesis. I don't believe this was Paul's intention, but I think it does picture what I'm talking about. When he talks about Epaphroditus in Philippians 2, and he says that he's a fellow soldier, fellow worker, and brother. He describes him with those three concepts. And I believe what he's indicating is that there are three relationships over which they interacted and around which they found their camaraderie. As a brother, brother is a community term. He's a fellow soldier, that's a cause, and he's a fellow worker, that's a corporate view. Their relationship existed with the healthy dynamics of all three. And one of the things that I'll want to help you discover is that in churches, we need to know, especially amongst staffs, if you come from a multi-staff church, we need to know whether our relationship is currently that of brother to brother, general to field soldier, or CEO to, vice president. How are we relating right now? I'm convinced that one of the things that damages churches is we get confused about what hat we're wearing. And because we don't know what hat we're wearing, feelings get hurt, missions don't get accomplished, and resources get squandered. So, the three circles are the community, and of course the community is fairly obvious. A major metaphor used in the Bible of the local church is that it is a family. Brothers and sisters all related to our perfect eldest brother, the Lord Jesus, under the headship of our Father. That's an obvious metaphor. The cause is all the military metaphors that were so popular, especially with the Apostle Paul, but also with Peter and others, that we exist to accomplish a cause. There's a mission. There's a hill to be taken. There's a war to be won. There's armor to be worn. There's enemies to be defeated. All of the military metaphor says that the church has about it a cause component. And then lastly, there's a corporate component, and probably the best verse is that all things should be done excellently and in order. A basic tack-on verse that allows hyper-control-oriented anal retentive J's on the Myers-Briggs to control everybody's life. Have you ever noticed that? You're in board meetings, some guy who just is scared to death of ever doing anything always says, well, things need to be done decently and in order, which is generally a caveat for never taking a risk. But I do think there are corporate elements to every church, and the corporate element is the effective and efficient, but primarily effective allocation of the finite resources to the critical growth path. That's the corporate nuances. It involves the effective allocation of finite resources to the critical growth path of the organization. We all have finite resources. We have finite money. We have finite time. We have finite gifts. We have finite facilities. We have finite capacities and capabilities. Corporate decisions are those decisions that allow us to determine how we're going to allocate the finite resources to accomplish the mission of the church. It deals with things like raising money, building buildings, organizational charts. Now, I'm convinced that most churches have a natural inclination towards one or two of these, and very few are naturally balanced towards all three. When I look back at the 10 years that I spent in Baltimore, planting and growing up a church to maturity, we concluded that our natural inclination was towards community. We had the community thing down. We loved to be brothers and sisters to one another. Love was a key component to what existed in our organization. We loved to be with, to hang out. We had that down. Secondarily, we had the cause thing down. We were very committed to world evangelization and ultimately to evangelizing non-church non-believers. We did not have the foggiest idea about what a corporation was. So we never talked about money, facilities, or organizational implications, like organizational charts, job descriptions. And that had all sorts of disastrous implications for our church. Disastrous. Which I can get into a little bit when I talk about the implications of being weak in one of these areas. Over the last 3 years that I was there, we developed a corporate side, balanced out that circle, and it allowed for the church to become much healthier. Okay, if you look at the second page, I want to go to point number two here, and I want to begin to tease out a little more of the distinction between these three circles, just so you can get a feel for the differentness. Because these three circles, everybody get one of these handouts? These three circles exist in a dynamic tension, and I think if we understand the metaphors, the values, the roles, the key people, how you enter, how you exit, and what the paybacks are, I think you can understand why these exist in a dynamic tension, which is a euphemism for you're going to have conflict. Let me just tease these out for you a little bit. The primary metaphor for the community, cause, and the corporation would be something like this, and I've touched on it, but the primary metaphor for the community is the family. The primary metaphor for the cause is the Army, or Navy, Marines, or Air Force. The primary metaphor for the corporation is the business. Now, if you go no further than that, you can see that there's a dynamic tension, because the relationships that exist amongst a family are different than those that exist amongst a squad in the military, and they're different than those that exist in the boardroom of an organization. But all three are biblical nuances of the way the church ought to function. The core values. I would argue that the core values of a community, the primary core value is love. That's what makes a family. We love each other. The core value of the cause is winning the war. And the core value of the corporation is effectiveness and efficiency in accomplishing the strategic objective. Well, those are significantly different, and you can begin to see how they might bump up against each other. If we're relating within a church, let's say we're as a group of elders or board of directors meeting together. Now, are we primarily loving each other right now? Or are we primarily thinking about how we're going to win the war for the souls of people? Or are we talking about how to be effective and efficient in the allocation of resources to the critical growth path? If we're talking brother to brother in a loving way, I might say things to you or you might to me that I wouldn't say if we were talking boss to employee or general to lieutenant or lieutenant to general, certainly. Let's talk about the roles. The roles in a community are roles like family, father, mother, brother, sister, right? The roles in a cause are military roles like general, lieutenant, sergeant, master sergeant. In a corporation, it's employee roles, CEO, president, comptroller, thus and so. Those are the way roles are described. And again, you relate to your mother differently than you relate to your boss. And you relate to a subordinate in a corporation different than you relate to a child. Now, which is it? Do you see how you have to keep these straight? Bill and I are both early morning guys, and we get here usually early. And periodically after we have our quiet times or whatnot, and he'll wander into my office. Well, when he walks in that door, I do an automatic check. It's not even conscious of who's walking in the door. Is my boss walking in the door? Is my brother in Christ walking in the door? Or is the commander-in-chief of this cause walking in the door? And I can usually tell in the first 10 seconds who walked in the door. The appropriate adjustment of hats leads to tranquility within any organism. If he's walking in the door to be my boss, and he wants to talk to me about the effective allocation of my giftedness to the critical growth path of the organization, which means I didn't do a good job teaching the day before, it would behoove me to understand that that's the hat that he's wearing, and he's not coming in primarily as a brother to bring me warmth and encouragement. He's coming in to give me corporate redirection, right? I'm telling you, this fouls up more churches because people don't know what hat they have on. Let me tease it out a little further. The key person in a community, the community being the family, who do you think?
The father.
No. The key person in a community is, do you know? Yeah, I think there are two possible answers to this, depending on your worldview of community here or family. One option is the eldest person, but I don't like that. I think the answer is the weakest person. I would argue, as Dietrich Bonhoeffer did, that the elimination of the weak is the death of the fellowship, and by that I think he's arguing that it's the death of the community, that communities, families by definition, are loving organisms designed to give dignity to the weakest link. That's what good families do. Now, dysfunctional families, don't work that way. But good families, I think the key person is the weakest person. In a cause or in an army, the key person is the most committed person, as evidenced by martyrdom. And in a corporation, the key person is the most productive person. This is very important because every organism has to determine who its heroes are going to be. Churches that are primarily community-oriented, their heroes are often the weakest person. And they build their entire ministry around meeting the needs of the weakest people. Is that biblical? Give me a verse. Yeah, 1 Corinthians 12, you're quoting the Gospels, but I think 1 Corinthians 12 where it says, and to the less seemly members we give more honor. I don't have the foggiest idea what that verse means. I've never been able to understand. I've taught on it countless times. But it has something to say, I think, about make the weakest people special. It really is a problematic verse if you've ever studied. I don't really know what it means. But it does seem to say to me that weaker people get more honor. Okay. Now that's real different than a church that is a very cause-oriented church, where the people who get the most honor are those who martyr themselves climbing the hill of the souls of lost people. You get in a room in that church, you know, they don't make heroes out of people who are vulnerable and transparent with their weaknesses and bleeding and weak and hurting. And, you know, that's what I like to make heroes of. No, in that room, you make heroes of people who climbed the latest mountain, you know, everybody who's notching scalps in the, you know, fuselage of their spiritual plane or whatever. Whereas you get into a church that's very corporate driven, that accentuates its corporation, then the person who's the hero is the most productive, the most efficient, the most effective. How do you enter? I like this. These next two are good. How do you enter a family? You're born into it or you're adopted into it. How do you enter a cause? You join or you're drafted. And how do you enter a corporation? You're hired. You interview and you're hired. This is good. How do you get out? How do you get out of a family? Actually, you don't. If you don't believe that, just study family systems and the impact that dead family members have on family systems. You are forever present having an impact. Do you see? You never get out of a family. How do you get out of a cause? An army. Yeah, you die, but hopefully you're killed. You can desert, that's true. You can get out without honor by deserting, but hopefully you get killed. That's the most honorable way to get out of a true cause-oriented... See, we've got a distorted view of war. You know, you need to go back and read Caesar's Gallic Wars to get a true view of cause that, you know, informed the Apostle Paul. You die. That's how you get out. You sacrifice your life as a martyr. And how do you get out of a corporation? Fired. Or you quit. You retire. Very different. If you don't believe this, you got a multi-staff church, just wait till you have to move somebody out of a job. Do you see? If you've sold them on the community thing, they say to you, I thought we were brothers and sisters. What they're saying to you is, you don't get out of a family. What are you doing telling me I don't work here anymore? And you're saying, no, I've got on my corporation hat now. You're fired. Oh. See. Well, I came in here with my brother hat on to tell you that my marriage is struggling and I've got these weaknesses and that's why I'm not productive. Yeah, but I've got on my corporate hat and you're fired. See? Ooh, ooh, ooh. This is why very few churches ever fire an employee who remains an integral part of the community of faith. Because there's not been adequate hat differentiation all throughout the relationship. What's the payback? Well, if you're in a community, the payback is relationships. Love and security. That's what you get out of being an integral part of a family, even if you're the weakest link. What's the payback for being part of a cause? Glory, medals, badges of honor, badges of courage. What's the payback in a corporation? Cash. That's the hygiene in Hirschberg's motivation hygiene theory. Without it, you will not be happy. The motivator is advancement and increased responsibility. Recognition. Healthy churches are dynamic interrelationships between all three circles. Okay? Comments or questions on this before I begin to tease out a couple implications here? Yeah. Sure, because I was just drawing them to distinguish them for you. I'm about to intersect them. In fact, I'll give you a principle, and I'm just full of principles. I don't have the foggiest idea how any of this applies, but I have lots of principles. If your church looks like this, where there's very clear borders, boundaries, and differentiation in relationships. In other words, in every encounter, we know whether we're functioning as community, cause, or corporation. And everybody knows their appropriate roles, da-da-da, in all these areas. And these borders are not blurred. And what I mean by that is, when you think about motivation and stuff, You can get motivation out of soldiers who are committed to causes that you cannot get out of employees committed to corporations. And you can get motivation out of family members you cannot get out of either of these. A lot of times what happens in churches is we blur the lines. We want somebody to do something. We know we can't get them to do it for the cause, so we approach them as a brother. And we end up, in essence, defrauding them into doing something they wouldn't have done if we would have kept the border straight. And they do it, but then they feel cheated afterwards. Or we get them to do something as part of the corporation that really they only should have done if it was a cause or a community. They think they did it as part of their job, and then we don't remunerate them for it adequately. We say, well, what you did is you, instead of working 40 hours, you worked 60 hours. What ought to be the payback for that? Money or increased responsibility, a motivator. What we do instead is we say, thank you, give them a hug and love you, brother. Or, boy, it's great to have people like you committed to the cause. You can do that once or twice. You do it 20 or 30 times, people feel defrauded and cheated and betrayed. Healthy bordered churches, and I use the term healthy, can be described with words like safe. It's a safe place to be. And if you push that to the other side of its continuum a little bit, boring. Okay, they're not nearly as exciting as this picture. By the way, this is the way many churches are in their early stages. Willow Creek was as well. And align the circles however you want here. Community, corporation, cause, with tremendous overlap. Very poor border differentiation. It's never clear how we're relating. We'll relate in whatever sphere we need in order to get, quote, the job done, but your concept of the job might be different than mine. Your concept of the job is we're trying to be effective and efficient in the allocation of resources. Mine is I'm trying to get loved. See, I come in here thinking this is my community where I get loved. You're very corporate driven. You think this is a place where we can use you to accomplish the strategic objective, and somebody else is very cause oriented thinking everybody's going to die to reach the hill. It's very foggy in here. You know what this tends to be described as? On the positive side, it can be very exciting. This kind of thing. Very scintillating. On the downside, it's very explosive. Because all of a sudden, it's possible for my brother to fire me. Brothers don't fire brothers, you know. That's why family businesses are disastrous things. What you've got here is a family business where brothers fire sisters. That doesn't work well. Okay? So a church, and then there are, of course, all varying degrees, per your statement, of overlap. The basic principle is the more they overlap, the more exciting it gets, the more dangerous it gets. The less they overlap, the safer it is, the more boring it tends to be. Okay? Now, the truth of the matter is, most churches kind of look like this. Right? Yeah. In other words, we do one thing very well. We got the corporate thing wired. This is a well-run corporation. The key people are people who wear tie wing-tipped shoes. Carry pocket protectors, laptop computers, and run Lotus in their head. You know, they think in organizational charts. These churches tend to be very effective, very efficient, and oftentimes, if you look back in the past, they were abused by a pastor who had a strong corporate, a strong cause orientation, or a strong community orientation, and wounded the people. And then the corporate kinds of people get in and say, we'll never let a senior pastor do that to us again. So they develop a very core, I mean, they got more bylaws, they got more, rules of protocol, they got book after book after book about how you change the linens, in all these different places and da 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 da. Very corporate oriented, okay? Now, they also have a bit of a family thing. They got the community thing going a little bit, and but they're zero on the cause. They wouldn't know a lost person, you know, if it fell out of the sky and fell down the chimney of the place. They just wouldn't know what to do with relating to the cause of world evangelization. Okay, well, what I tend to call this is a well-organized love-in kind of thing. Okay, but they're not getting anything done. And so hitters, killers, you know, the terms you hear around here a lot, people who really want to be difference makers, who tend to be cause-oriented, get around this, and after a while they say, it's too stultified and it's too cozy. Nobody knows where the war is. So they go someplace else. You know where they go? They go find this one. They go find one that's a cause-oriented doggy. Most of these are like parachurch organizations. They're very cause-oriented. So they leave the local church and they say, I can't find a local church that's cause-oriented enough. Everybody around there, you know, has pickle juice running in their veins. It's a dead place. So they get involved in parachurch organizations or cults in many cases that have a strong cause orientation to it. And they might be well organized. They've got a corporate nuance to them, but there's no community aspect to it. There's very little love going on. You exist. Your existence has value only in its utilitarian ability to contribute to the accomplishment of the effective cause. See? You ever been around a place like that? You don't matter just because you are. You don't matter just because you have being and existence. You matter because you can contribute to the cause and in a well-organized and effective manner. Okay? Of course, then the next circle is something that looks like this. And, you know, there's all variations on this. You got a strong community nuance. And then there's, again, a bit of an organized aspect to this. And then there's very little cause here. This describes probably most churches in America, this kind of a feel. And basically, what you can say about this churches is they're going to be someplace between 70 and 200 in size, which is 85% of all the churches in America. I'm not saying, by the way, the community is healthy in these churches. I'm just saying that's what's valued. So much so that they set up a non-permeable membrane around the church, which says, you ain't part of the community, so we don't want you in here. So anybody who talks cause, especially the cause of inviting in non-community people who aren't part of our, you know, they don't understand the handshake and, you know, exactly how we hold the communion cup and why this woman is still playing the organ even though she cannot possibly find the right note. They don't understand these things. So we don't let them into our organization, and therefore our church never grows above 70 to 200. These are single-cell organisms. The vast majority of churches in America have 70 people in them because that's about the appropriate size for a clan, which is the largest community group. Well, how would you draw a Willow Creek circle? You've been around here 2 days. Let me draw a couple circles. What would you say is their biggest circle? Yep. I'd say cause. Second biggest circle? Probably corporation. If you hang around here, that's probably what would get said. And the third circle? Probably community. Probably a fair reflection of what Willow Creek is. This kind of a balance. Now, it ebbs and flows, and you could talk to some people who've been deeply impacted by the love of the community here, and they would think the community is overwhelmingly large. But I think a Martian dropped in from another planet who did naive listening and didn't have a personal experience of the organization would probably freight it out something like this. Strong cause, then corporation, then community. Why do you think it's shaped this way? It's leaders. Yeah. Hybels and his descendants. Yeah, which is a kind word for disciples. Yeah. This is the way he's shaped. He's wired together. He's a cause-driven animal. Don't you sense that? I mean, I dropped in on a couple of the sessions yesterday just for 5 minutes, you know, and I've heard most of these lectures over again, although he kind of rewrote some of these. I work in there and I want to sign up again. And I'm already signed up and I want to sign up again. You know, it's like I want to go, I'll take another tour of duty. I'll go. I mean, that's what he feels like to you, doesn't he? He feels like he's the general. He's like Schwarzkopf. It's what he feels like. And he feels like, there's the mountain. I'm climbing it. Who wants to come along? We are going to give our lives to something bigger than ourselves. Are you a killer or not? Get the whole feel? And boy, I mean, it attracts, you know, people who are oriented this way, you know, especially baby boomers who came through the 60s who still want a cause. They light up for this stuff. See? Well, and you might sense he's got a bit of a corporate feel, too. Yeah, you know, we joke, you know, when he's got free time, he likes to wander down, you know, to the to Ken Filippini's office, the director of finance and development, and, you know, talk about dollars. And I mean, I really think the guy's, you know, a frustrated developer. He's just going to build these things, you know. He just builds and builds and builds. He's got the whole corporate thing down, and he really does understand leadership in a corporation. Like few, you know, I read, that's one of my hobbies is to read in that field, and I read tons in this field. I don't know, Bill reads hardly any of it. He just lives it out ahead of them all. You know, Drucker writes about him, and I mean, he's very corporate. Now, he also happens to be a brother, too. And this circle in his life is growing. If you listen to his Building Bigger Hearts series, this is growing all the time. Because he's a great leader, he knows that the church will be functioning best if these three circles are basically in equivalent juxtaposition to one another. Then the church is healthy. He would say that this circle has been historically too small in his life, and he's paid a large price for it. And now through his Building Bigger Hearts series and what God has done in his life over the last year, this circle is coming into wonderful balance as he balances these three. So Willow, as it's maturing, is coming into the dynamic juxtaposition